Since 1898, Marquis Who's Who has offered our distinguished listees the opportunity to set themselves apart through our print publications. Now, Marquis Radio offers these illustrious professionals the chance to shine in our one-on-one interviews. My guest today is Jackie Wirt, who is a licensed clinical social worker in private practice. How are you doing today, Jackie?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Glad to hear it. So why don't we start off by you telling us how you got your start as a social worker?
Well, I went to college. I actually was going to at the University of Iowa in Iowa City when I was finished with high school, and I was originally going to major English literature and whatever, and took my first core course in psychology, and I was hooked. I did get a lot of hours, almost a second major in English literature, but I followed up with my interest in psychology, and I have a Bachelor of Science in Psychology from the University of Iowa. And toward the end of my senior year, I started a part-time job at the Psychopathic Hospital, which was affiliated with the School of Medicine at the University of Iowa Medical School. And I was flirting with graduate school at the time, and it gave me an opportunity to remain on the campus and take a few courses. And by the end of the year, I really just realized I didn't want to start graduate school at this point, start a job hunting, quite frankly, all over the country. And after a year, I had several options, and I listed them out, and I said, whichever one comes first is the one I'm going to go with, and it turned out to be Cook County Department of Public Aid in Chicago, Illinois. At that time, the county public assistance agencies were operated at the county level by 68 or 69. I think the state then reorganized the system and made it a statewide organization. But I remained with that for about 5 years and then moved into child welfare with Illinois Department of Children and Family Services. And I just found that I liked and enjoyed the social services. I enjoy people, and people seem to respond to me as well. And the issue was trying to find the focus that I wanted if I'm going to stay in the social service business, because there are many, many, many subspecialties and whatever. In my case, it turned out to be child welfare.
So as a social worker specializing in child welfare, what would a typical day look like for you?
Well, I wasn't a clinical social worker when I started out in child welfare. So in the child welfare business, initially you report to your agency, and I've done a variety of tasks in child welfare, direct services with intact families who are trying to solve a problem with respect to their child. And I spent a number of years working with children who were moved into foster care or some type of group home or residential placement because there was severe breakdown in the parent-child relationship, and ultimately I moved into the adoption arena where I remained for 22 years, both as a senior social worker and my last 12 years supervising an adoption team. If you're in that type of work, you either report to work at your desk and take care of your messages and review your caseload and any particular tasks that need to be completed and work on a service plan. And those are fairly scheduled and structured. We also had to report to the juvenile court system. In those days, and it's still probably true today, that when children come into the system, we have to have a legal relationship with the child. And most of them will be through the juvenile court system based on a neglect, abuse, or dependency status of the child with respect to their caregivers, usually their biological parents, and go forward from that. And we would do field work, attend professional sessions in a variety of settings, whether it's a treatment center, a private agency that monitors child welfare, hospital, whatever. and as well as our court work. There's not a real quick, simple, easy way to describe it, but it's an overview. And I did that type of work for 33 years. And I had an interest in private clinical work, which developed when I went back for some postmaster's training in family systems and family therapy. And when I was in the training, I had excellent diagnostic possibilities from the State Department, but I needed some individual clinical work. One of my co-students helped me locate a social worker who had a private practice who needed some extra help on hand, and then I also went to work for a Elk Grove Schomburg Mental Health, which was a family counseling center for the local region, and got some background and experience there. And after I graduated from the program, I continued to work with the State Department of Children and Family Services, but a couple evenings a week, and on Saturdays I would see private clients. And once I left the State Department, I decided to continue that on a part-time basis as an independent, again, a licensed clinical social worker. The licensure came about, I think, in 1990. The state passed a law whereby social workers needed to have a license in place, and there were two levels of licensure, and with my background in education, I qualified for the LCSW, which I continue to retain and keep up with my continuing education credits and practice.
Now, how does the work of a licensed clinical social worker differ from that of a typical social worker?
Well, if they're doing clinical work, I would say the intensity of the interventions and referrals for additional evaluation as needed. If one suspects that there may be a psychiatric diagnosis involved, like a severe depression or bipolar, one makes a referral to a psychiatrist and or a clinical psychologist for assessment and evaluation of those conditions. And then from that, determining helps determine the treatment plan and going forward, and which may and likely will continue some type of therapy, whether it's with a social worker or a psychologist, and it may involve some other types of therapies as well. But I would say the difference is in the intensity of the work.
I see. What personal attributes would you say you possess that make you effective in your role?
Well, I think, first of all, I genuinely like people, and I think people respond to that. They can feel comfortable coming into the office. And I'm comfortable dealing with very difficult, complex situations, problems, be they psychosocial in a person's presentation, personality, or any legal problems that some people may have with respect to the law, and that we can talk about the situation and figure out what is the best plan to resolve these problems so these people can get on with their lives if that's what they wish. And I just like people and have a high tolerance for a very wide range of behaviors and presentations.
If you had to narrow it down to one or two things, what do you think is the most rewarding aspect of what you do?
Well, when I was in child welfare, it was primarily to help a child get into a permanent home where they were safe and secure and wanted. And for me, that translated into adoption planning. In clinical work now, it's identifying the problematic area and the issue and to figure out how to resolve the problems that are interfering with either an individual or a couple or a family for from having the fullness of that experience, whether it's in the marriage or whether it's the family life, or just for an individual enjoying day-to-day life and feeling that they are okay people and can have the friends and family or what relationships that are most important to them, and to help them move forward in those directions. Mm-hmm. There's not any simple answer, because every individual person is different with their own history and identifying issues, which is part of what makes the work interesting for somebody like myself, but helping people to figure out a pathway to go forward and to achieve what they want in their relationships and their life.
So in what ways, if any, do you think the field has changed since you got your start?
Wow. That's a long time, you know. Well, with children, I think our understanding of child development and what children need to grow up, and to developing the resources, whether it's psychotherapy, inpatient psychiatric, or if it's a group home type situation, and having the range of clinical responses that make a difference for children, and that's improved, I think, considerably over the years. That's a tough question to answer. I think our understanding of human development and human needs and our relationships and how they work has made a big difference. I'd have to ponder that for a while to come up with a more detailed or sophisticated answer. And we're much more accepting of people and their individual life situations.
So when you say that our understanding of individual needs and situations has improved, do you know of any specific examples of a case in which that has occurred?
I'm going to be very frank. I probably do. I would need to go through my caseload to sort
of. Okay. No worries. I just wanted to know if you had something on the top of your head. No problem.
Right. No,
okay.
Problem. We'll move on. My head. And
okay.
The other piece you asked about improvement, I do have a negative response to that question issue.
Okay.
When I started my private practice, I had some decisions to make about where I was going to get my cases, how much marketing I wanted to do, and whatever. And I finally decided to get on a number of insurance panels, and about 20 of them all totaled, and Medicare. And there were enough responses from people looking over their insurance who were looking for therapists or counselors that I was reasonably busy. I didn't want any more than about a half-time job. And I was as busy as I wanted to be for several years. The biggest change came about, very frankly, and this is going to be a touchy topic, it was when the Affordable Care Act passed. And what I discovered in the behavioral health arena was that when people would come in for counseling services, and I encourage them to use their employee assistance program if their company or their employer had one, so they could get 3, 5, or 8 sessions, no cost out of pocket for them, and I bill the appropriate agency for the service. And what we were discovering is that with their insurance, in order to get premiums down as low as they could, either individually if the client was paying for it or if the employer was paying for it, they would end up with astronomical deductibles of $1,500, $3,000, $5,000, $8,000 a year per person, which basically means that people are paying for, at least in the behavioral health arena, much of their care out of pocket. And that has made caseloads diminish considerably. I don't know what people are doing unless they get into a public health center where there is a different fee schedule available. I don't know. And in my case, I've had a very small handful of clients that I've worked with for quite a number of years. We continue forward. Many of those people have Medicare and behavioral health services that are, well, when they're on Medicare, it's because they have a psychiatric condition that has met the standards for that program, and they will continue in that program, if not for life, at least for as long as their condition exists, and many conditions are lifetime. So I continue to work with those folks, but it's been a huge shift in the type of caseload, and I don't know how it's all going to resolve, because much of it has to do with the availability and the nature of our insurance products, at least for behavioral health. I have no idea how this plays out in other medical arenas and medical services. And as for myself, I'm a senior citizen. I have my Medicare and my insurance in place, and I also happen to be very gifted with coming from a family of extreme longevity and exceptional health, because I have absolutely no chronic conditions and don't need any medications, and which is a great gift. But not everybody operates that way, and for whatever reasons. And the individual lifeline and timeline for everybody is profoundly different. And I don't know what else I can say at that point, except that I do think our insurance industry is rather restrictive, at least in the behavioral health arena and that part of it in which I work. But
now, I'd like to explore that particular area further. In your opinion, and I only mention this because it is a fairly hot topic today, politically speaking, but what do you think would be the ideal role of government in providing comprehensive health insurance? Do you support a sort of expansive role where the government is a single-payer system, and they use their collective bargaining power, rather, to lower the cost of services? Or do you favor the free market solution where multiple independent insurance companies compete against each other?
Probably the latter. Everybody is going to have their personal reaction to an answer to your question, and it's quite a broad question with a lot of options. So I'm going to answer for myself. I'm not going to say I think this is the end all. I would rather not have a single payer system. I would rather have the option of a federal system like Social Security, Medicare, and whatever, for those people who qualify for it. It does make a big difference. And for seniors, many of us who have worked for any length of time, many years, will have the benefit of that program. Hopefully, we have a few other pension plans in place, which may or may not have insurance attached to them. Mine do, as a matter of fact. And I would rather see a significantly good-sized insurance industry out there with companies developing products that they probably work through the companies, and although people can go online and find ways to buy insurance independently. But I think there's more options available to people when we have a fairly, I like the word you used, kind of like a free market system. And but that would be my personal bias, and I don't pretend that I have the answers for all of the problems. And we live in a large country with a lot of opinions about that kind of thing. but I know where I would fall out.
Okay. So my next question is actually one that I try to ask all of my interviewees, and that is, when you look back on your life as a whole and your career as a whole, what do you think has been the most important lesson that you've learned?
That's a very good question. The first word that comes to mind is tolerance. And understanding of people. And I mean individual people and wherever they're at. I mean, there are many people who live very full, healthy, productive lives, and it's interesting to meet them and understand how they got there. And there are people who have much more difficulty in one aspect or other of their life. Well, what is the issue that has arisen? What makes it the difference for them? And then there are people who have some pretty severe problems. I think tolerance and trying to understand what works and what doesn't work, and for people who are on a path that's more difficult, to give them a helping hand to go forward if they're willing to take it. And but I think I think tolerance and understanding are the two words that come first to my mind. And ironically, as I'm saying that, I'm thinking about my father and his conversations that we had when I made the decision to move into social services. He worked for a good-sized manufacturing company in central Iowa and moved up the ranks, but he dealt with a wide range of people. Whether he was on the manufacturing production line or whether he was in some level of management, intermediate management, or much higher management. But he believed in respecting the individual worker and helping them to achieve the production, not only for the company, but also find a place for them where they could be most productive as individuals, if that's what they chose. And I think that underlying value system, I attribute that to my family, a very large extended family on both sides, both my parents. And with people who make their living in a very wide range of ways across a good part of the United States. Anyway, I don't know
if that answers your question. It does indeed. That actually ties in very nicely. I was just about to ask you what you think, if any, the role of your family has been in your professional success.
A lot of freedom to talk about situations and reminiscing about how things got resolved in earlier times. Again, my father came from a family of 12 siblings, and 10 of them grew up. They were central Iowa. My mother came from a family of 9 and started the family in central Iowa and moved to southwestern Colorado. She came back to Iowa when she became 18, 19 years old, met my father, and the rest of that is history. And she had a brother who came back to Iowa. In fact, they lived not far from where my parents were living when I was growing up. They had a very large sibling group, and I was quite close to a couple of those siblings. And these people were very oriented to family life and committed to their relationships, whether it be at the marriage and the larger family and in raising the children and helping the children to find their individual path. Use my father as an example. I remember one time, because I came from a SIP group of 4, and the third child died in childhood from a childhood disease, very serious. And So three of us grew up, and my two brothers were 16 and 17 years older than me. They became World War II veterans, and then I was coming up. And when we became adults, one of them, when they came back from the service, went to the University of Iowa, or not University of Iowa, Iowa State University in Ames, got a double degree in engineering and became an engineer, chemical engineer actually, for the DuPont Corporation in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And my other brother, when he came back, and he was in the Navy, and started working at Maytag and decided that he wanted to go to beautician school. Went to Des Moines, got some training, and started the owner of the school, and who had a number of beauty shops and upscale department stores around Iowa and Nebraska. He started managing those and then moved his wife and children to Florida and stayed in that line of business all of his life. He was very, very gifted artistically and just excellent with people and the business aspects of it. Then I come along a few years later, and I go off to college, and I decide to move to Chicago and become a social worker. Finally, I said to my dad, how did you do this? You've got an engineer, a hairstylist, and a social worker in Chicago. How do you account for that? He just looked at me and smiled and shook his head. And and I think it's a statement about the support we had as individuals to grow and develop along our individual path. And I remember when I was in my early teens, Dad would talk with me about looking to the stars and pick the star you want, and when you pick it, you go for it. And the support and the encouragement. At that time, he was starting to talk to me about the possibility of going to college and planting the seed in my mind. And of course, it made a difference because I got pretty good grades in high school and ironically, I did something kind of unusual. I only applied to one university. I'd made up my mind I was going to the University of Iowa. Unfortunately, they accepted me. I don't think I'd have had any trouble getting into any other college, but it was just the way it was. But the point is that we are so alike in our values, in our family, our religious views and things of that ilk, but in terms of our personal development, our careers, our families, were also quite different and traveled along some very different paths. And it's been a very enriching kind of experience because we kept very close track of each other. And I've talked about people, I had several aunts, my dad's siblings who moved to California and raised their children there, my cousins, Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, California, Washington State, and Oregon, and then, of course, back to Iowa, Nebraska. We're scattered about, but we do keep close track of each other and visit over time. You know, you don't go visiting that many people once a year, but you keep close track. And I think trying to find the right words, but the connection to belonging to a group of people who genuinely care about you as an individual and about how your life comes out and are supportive of your choices. And I don't know how else to put it, but it's satisfying and comforting from where I'm sitting. And I'm very proud of these people. I'm proud to be a part of that group.
I'm certain they're very proud of you, too.
I hope so. I haven't had any complaints lately. The biggest issue now is that I'm one of the next to the youngest of 13 cousins on my father's side. And there's just a handful of us left. I mean, I'm 78 years old, and my closest cousin is 76 in Des Moines. Her sister is 80, I think she's 82 in Texas. And you start realizing your family's shrinking, but there's all these other ones coming up behind, and not quite as many as, because my grandparents, when they had 12 children, it was a good-sized family. And to think that 10 of them grew up and moved on. And it was parallel in my mother's family as well. And it's meant a lot to me. It's like a solid base. And when you've got something you're trying to sort out and want to talk about, there's somebody there that you can talk to, you know, in the larger extended family. To some extent for me, if some of that falls to some of my nephews and nieces. And they're, what can I say? They're good listeners. and they tell you what they think, which is what I want. But I think family is a great blessing, and when you have one that has been functional and not only just in terms of making a living and whatever, but also in developing relationships and teaching us how to problem solve, take care of ourselves, how to love each other, and to appreciate our individuality, which is very true in my family. What can I say? I was just beginning to have memories of my father's mother, my grandmother, and she was quite connected to all of us. And if she had a thought or felt we needed to think about something, she would say so. She had a very tactful way of doing it, or giving us feedback, and considering the number of children she raised. She knew what she was doing, and what can I say? They're all good people, and very interesting lives, each one in their own right.
So if you look forward to the next generation of social workers, the next generation of licensed clinical social workers, what advice would you give to them based on the sum total of your knowledge?
The first thing is, whatever specialty you pick, find yourself a very, very good supervisor, a beginning supervisor, who will teach you how to manage the job, the business of the job, as well as how to deal with people, human issues as they come up, and how to negotiate them. And I think there's no substitute for finding a very, very good supervisor for that. And I'd recommend that to anybody who wants to go into the field. It's very helpful if you find an agency or a practice group or whatever. As it may be just you and a supervisor, but then it might also be an administrator. And finding an administrator who is sensitive to these issues and develops a work structure to keep track of the work, but also to support it and move forward. And also, if a situation arises, to let you know how to handle it, if there are some special extenuating circumstances that might come into play, whether they be a conflict in what the service plan should be and the type of intervention, or whether it's there's a disagreement that, because I worked in child welfare, whether the child should even be removed from home, or if the child's removed from home, where does the child go live? Foster care, extended family, relative, group home, and so on. And having in larger situations, a very good administrator, not only to support my supervisor, but also and ultimately supporting me as the line worker who's the first guy out the door into the street. And I stand pat the supervisors. Find a very good supervisor. to help you learn how to work the system and work the cases and know where to get help when you need it, whether it's increasing your skills or whether it's consultation. I stand pat. Find a good supervisor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jackie, for taking the time out of your day to share your story with our listeners. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to Marquee Radio. Stay tuned for more in-depth and informative interviews with professionals from all walks of life.